Hello and welcome to the Fitz on Fantasy podcast. I'm the one they call Fitz. Full name, Patrick Michael Fitzmaurice. Find me on Twitter at Fitz_FF. You can find my weekly fantasy rankings at thefootballgirl.com. And can you believe it's almost December already? My goodness, where is autumn gone? We just got nearly a foot of snow here in the northwestern suburbs of Chicago. What the hell? We're not supposed to get measurable snow before the start of the fantasy playoffs. I was not excited about having to shovel my driveway on Monday morning, but I am very excited to present this week's show to you. I apologize that it's coming out a day later than usual, but I'll try to make it up to you with a great guest. I will be joined this week by Davis Maddock. He is the precocious young host of an outstanding new podcast called The Take Cast. That's T-A-E-K cast. That has become a weekly must-listen for me. I really think you should give it a listen, too. I think you'd like it. Davis is also the co-host of a weekly DFS podcast called The Swole Cast. And like me, he is a contributing writer to CBS Sportsline. And Davis also does articles for a number of other fantasy and DFS sites. He is not shy with his opinions, and we are going to cover a wide range of topics, both football-related and non-football-related. I really think you'll enjoy the conversation. So glad you could join me today. Really hope you had a good Thanksgiving, brimming with family, friends, food, and football. And now we enter the home stretch of the fantasy football season. The fantasy playoffs are just a week or two away. Fantasy championships will be decided in less than a month's time. We are down to brass tacks, people. Hopefully most of you have already punched your ticket to the playoffs. But look, a lot of you are playing do or die games this week. Some of you will do, some of you will not do. For those of you who play in just one or two leagues, this might be your last week of competitive fantasy football until next September, or at least until fantasy draft season next August. So for those of you who are going to be done with fantasy football very soon, I just want you to know that this podcast is still going to be around during the off season. I might take off 1 week right before the Super Bowl, but other than that, there are no plans to take off in the off season. There are going to be new episodes coming out every single week. There's going to be discussion about off season happenings. There's going to be discussion about the 2019 NFL draft and the rookie class. There's going to be ample discussion about 2019 fantasy rankings and what next year's fantasy drafts are going to look like. So I hope you'll stay with me. There are also going to be great guests. In fact, I have verbal commitments from some pretty well-known people in the fantasy media who had to politely turn down invitations to come on this podcast during the regular season simply because they were too busy with their analytical work. So Fitz on Fantasy podcast will be here for you, my friends. And if you have to take a few weeks off to lick your wounds, I'll certainly understand. But hurry on back, okay? I want you here with me as we head into a long, cold winter without NFL football games. And I know you'll want to get a jump on the 2019 fantasy season. All right, now let's get to this week's guest. My guest this week is the host of what has become one of my favorite podcasts. He bills it as a mostly sports podcast, and it is truly a wide-ranging show. It's called The Take Cast. That's T-A-E-K, cast. And he is Mr. Davis Maddock. He is also a co-host of The Swole Cast, which is a DFS pod. And he is also my colleague at CBS Sportsline. You can find him on Twitter at Davis Maddock. That's M-A-T-T-E-K. Davis, thanks for joining me this week.
I think at this point, calling the TakeCast a sports podcast is just false advertising. I don't remember the last time I gave out any actionable or helpful advice on that show, but people do seem to like it regardless.
You briefly sideswiped some sports topics on that podcast, but it's sports, it's lifestyle, it's food, it's it is quite the cornucopia of topics.
Food, man. I'm on a big kicking kick right now watching these food cooking shows on Netflix. It just makes me want to cook. It's actually a lot better than just consistently ordering Postmates.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you said you were cooking dinner before you came on with me. What were you making? What was on the menu tonight?
Homemade Indian tikka masala, which is just like kind of like butter and tomato sauce on chicken and rice.
Oh God, that sounds delicious.
It was not bad. Certainly, you know, it'd be not as good as if you went to India to go and eat it, but you know, it gets the job done, which is really all I'm trying to do.
Beautiful. Well, let's talk about the TakeCast to start off. You've been doing podcasts and or live streams for quite a while now, but how did you get the idea for this one? Did you specifically want to start a podcast that wasn't totally wedded to a single aspect of fantasy or DFS or gambling?
Okay, so what happened is I do this show on RotoGrinders on Sunday nights called The Gilcast, which is a recap of NFL DFS from that last week with Sammy Reed and Nate Noling, who were my co-hosts back in the Fantasy Insider days and then moved over to RG. And in the football offseason, there's just not a ton for me to do per se. And so we had just kind of been kicking this idea around of maybe starting a Patreon or starting a once-a-week Gilcast with the three of us. And then basically what happened is I was like, well, you guys have real jobs and you're not available during the day, but I am. I can just record a podcast whenever I want because I work from home and I can just kind of, you know, work around that schedule. And so it was just kind of a natural transition of being like, I did the first show with Michael Leone. And people kind of liked that, and we didn't really talk about anything actionable. We kind of just chatted about sports and gambling and DFS. And then the second episode was with Josh Hermsmeyer, Frisco Josh, and people really liked that. And then kind of after that, I did an episode with Silva and with Dink, and then I was like, oh yeah, this is just what I always should have been doing. This is actually my calling, much more so than like doing DFS picks is my calling.
Yeah, you and your guests, and you get some really good guests. Dink, Drew Dinkmeyer, for people not familiar, the a great DFS mind and former Millionaire Maker winner. So you really do cover a lot of ground depending on who you're talking to, and you kind of tailor the subject matter to the guest. It might be career stuff, it might be food, it might be politics. And we were talking about this before backstage, I guess. That I love when you have Pat Mayo, who is, you know, quite a prolific podcaster. When you have him on your podcast, you two will talk about basically anything. And a great example of that was when, in his last appearance on your show just last week, Mayo asked you out of the blue what you thought movie henchmen were paid, what their salary would be. And you, like, immediately spat out, without breaking stride at all, a very sensible, well-reasoned answer without even thinking about it. Do you remember what you said?
I think that I probably said that they don't get paid very much just because they're pretty expendable. I feel like there's not like a good retirement plan. After thinking about it more though, it's actually funny you brought it up. I was thinking about that in the car. I think maybe the way you would get them in is by giving henchmen this like insanely good pension plan, and then, you know, henchmen just always die, so they never get to withdraw from the pension.
I guess that would be a pretty good employer investment, but you know, you were spot on, I think, about saying that the employer would obviously take care of all their needs, their living accommodations. They'd be there in the lair, you know, probably have a pretty good setup, food.
Yeah, there's some barracks, probably.
Probably like pretty nice, you know, maybe a private quarters, you'd like to think. I mean, henchmen, they do some tough work. So, you know, they deserve pretty nice living accommodations. So you broke into the fantasy DFS media at a pretty young age. You were still in college when you were first getting paid to write, correct?
Yeah, very young. I think I started my website when I was 19.
So what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned in that time, things that you feel like you've gotten better at over time?
I mean, the biggest lesson I could ever tell to anyone is just make friends and be nice to people, because that'll get you way further in any industry than just being good, Will.
I mean, I think it's to your credit that you, you know, started doing this when you were so young, and yet you were someone who even an old fart like myself enjoyed listening to. I mean, we probably have different worldviews on a lot of things just because of the age difference between us, which is like 20 years plus. But I think you're like remarkably articulate and erudite for someone so young. And it also seems to me like you've gotten less strident over the last few years in some of your opinions. And I think maybe the most obvious example is when you were the self-appointed captain of Team Big Receiver for a while, probably peaking in 2014, which, you know, you got into some Twitter beefs about this. And it just so happened that the 2014 rookie class had like the best crop of small receivers we've ever seen come out of college in a single year. Odell Beckham, Brandon Cooks, Jarvis Landry. But it almost seemed like you made kind of a
I did think Cooks was going to be good, though. To my credit, I was pretty certain that Cooks was going to be good out of all of those guys.
I know Beckham, you weren't too sure about, but it did seem.
No, Beckham, I thought was just going to be bad. There's no reason to sugarcoat it. I basically was ready for Odell Beckham to be Denarius Moore.
Would you say it seemed like, I don't know, did you make a conscious effort after that to be more measured in your takes?
No, I just think this is something that pretty much everyone my age ends up going through, is you just learn that life is a lot less black and white and that there's a lot of room for error in any kind of prognostication, and that generally the people who are telling you like, oh no, I'm for sure right and you're for sure wrong, generally don't have the most to offer. So I think more than anything, it's just kind of realizing that, you know, you don't know everything, and that there's a very good possibility that other people have insights that are just as important and just as valuable as yours.
Yeah, that's a good takeaway, to be sure. You and the aforementioned Sammy Reed just had a discussion on your pod about where you, you kind of delved in your podcasting origins and how you actually started podcasting, or maybe I should say live streaming. That might be the better term, like before the pod boom. And you also said something about how you'd be happy if you could just continue to be a professional podcaster for a while. You think you're basically just going to keep at it as long as you can make a living doing it. And I know you write too. And, you earn a lot of money writing, but, do you think you'll keep going with the pod as long as you can, or do you think you'll eventually get bored with it and dive into something else?
Well, right now the podcast is like, that's like kind of my hobby, like not my hobby so much, but I don't do it strictly for the money. I think it's really good for brand purposes to do. And I think that, it's good for me to make connections with a lot of these people and kind of teach me some important skills about like scheduling and, you know, communicating when you need something from people. But the podcast is mostly done out of love right now. And the money that's generated from it is like, you know, that's fun money. But I do ideally, you know, 2 years from now, if I was making enough from the Patreon or from advertisements or whatever to just do the podcast full time. Yeah, I mean, that would be a scenario where it's true that, you know, if you do what you love, you're not working a day in your life. And that would be very true for me in regards to doing a podcast for a living.
That's excellent, man. I hope it's the case. And I hope we continue to get take casts for a long time because you're doing excellent work there. We should turn to football, at least for a little while, though, Davis.
Yeah, we should try, probably. That's probably what the people actually want.
So it turns out you and I are going to war this week in the Scott Fish Bowl. It's a 12-week regular season, and we have both earned wildcard spots in our conference. So our two teams are among the...
That's crazy that out of 900 people or whatever, that our two schedules would match up that way.
It does, and I think we're pretty close in overall scoring. You got me by maybe like 2 points a week. We're among the 20 teams in our conference that are going to fight it out to advance to week 14, and the top half of the 20 of us will advance. So tell me about your Scott Fish Bowl team and which draft picks went right for you and which picks went wrong.
It is absolutely astounding that in a league this competitive, my first round pick was David Johnson and I still made the playoffs. Like that's like actually why, and I don't have a third quarterback either. Most of the good teams were able to get a third quarterback, whether it be, maybe they picked Jameis up or maybe they got Baker. maybe Mariota, but my third quarterback was Bradford, who I think maybe generated 6 points and then was cut. So I think what went right with my team is my wide receivers. I got a huge boost from Juju Smith-Schuster. I got some good games from Marquise Goodwin before he got hurt. Got some good games from Keelan Cole before he went to the bench. And then running back Tariq Cohen, his renaissance obviously has been really helpful. Sony Michel had a couple good games. But the strength of the team is really Drew Brees having a quality second quarterback in Case Keenum. And then my tight end situation is Jeff Heirman, David Njoku, and Travis Kelce. And I've noticed that most weeks that's kind of where I end up winning is with the quarterbacks and the tight ends.
Yeah, in a tight end premium league, having Kelce and Njoku too. He's been a little inconsistent this season, but he's had some pretty nice games. That is a dangerous team. We have Brees in common. I don't even know how I'm in the playoffs, man. No AJ Green now, no Devonta Freeman, so they're right.
Did you make any like good waiver wire moves at any point in the year? Because the one move I made is hilariously bad.
So about my best one was CJ Uzama, because I had Delanie Walker on my team. And
that's a very, in a league this deep with 23, 24 roster spots, that's a good add.
Oh, especially since I basically tanked tight end after Delanie Walker. And I actually picked up Heirman too. So until, this latest injury, that was working out too. But nothing real exciting as far as pickups. Nothing that's helped me immensely. What was your big expenditure?
I dropped $100 of fab on Alfred Morris before the season started. And actually, I still think, like, going back, the logic was not that bad, but I didn't need to go 100, obviously. But the logic was not bad, which was basically, if you get one difference-making pickup in this league, that's huge, because it's so hard. The waiver wire is so barren that the chances are you may not even spend any of that money by come the end of the year. And second, I'm like not the greatest at remembering to set my lineups and check everything and do waiver moves for 10 different leagues. So there was like decent equity that I would forget and do something wrong. And I just would already have that guy on my roster. And really what happened was is San Francisco just fell apart. And as a result of that falling apart, Alf never really got going.
Well, people should know about the Scott Fishbowl that first of all, we draft the Monday after the 4th of July. So you can have your lineup decimated by injuries before the regular season even begins. And the other thing is that, you're drafting in 12-team conferences, but you're drafting 22 rounds and there are no kickers or defenses. So on the waiver wire, the tumbleweeds are blowing each week. I mean, there is just nothing out there. So if it sounds crazy to drop $100 on any player, when you know the league setup, it's really not that crazy and it happens all the time. So what we're just generally.
Scott Barrett did the same thing and he also spent $100 on Alf Morris.
And I'm kind of surprised that it didn't work out. I mean, it turned out Alf was just out of gas, but some history with Shanahan sort of fit into a zone blocking scheme. It kind of made sense, but then, it didn't work out too.
Well, in some leagues, Adrian Peterson was available. He was not in mine, but in some he was. And if I had spent $100 on Adrian Peterson as opposed to Alf, I would have gotten, I think Peterson's probably had like four or five like really startable weeks, whereas I think Alf has had zero.
Yeah, but the intent was not bad though. I mean, in that league, I mean, there was a little bit of an advantage to running backs, I think, unlike conventional PPR leagues, this one maybe mutes wide receiver performance a little bit and enhances running back value. So not crazy at all. Generally, Davis, what were some of your better calls before the season? Guys you were high on who kind of panned out, or, just general predictions that sort of came to fruition?
Well, I guess I did make a big effort to get James Conner in best ball drafts and in my seasonal leagues. I felt that something fishy was going on with Lev. So that's kind of been the number one thing that was good. I also really liked Sony Michel. I basically was going in a round earlier on Sony Michel, regardless of where he was, pretty much all season long. I just really liked him. Like, basically, I was like, if this dude's healthy, he is going to be good. And I actually liked all the Patriots running backs, and Burkhead doesn't feel great. I liked Thielen a lot. I liked him more than consensus. I'm just looking at some of my rosters right now. Cooper Kupp, actually, that was a good one. I got a lot of Cooper Kupp in these best balls. And Eric Ebron. Eric Ebron is just absolutely dragging some of my best ball teams, like, to very good finishes, because, I mean, that dude has just been crushing it in the best ball formats.
Oh, and now with Jack Doyle out, I mean, he is going to be like a, you know, top three weekly tight end the rest of the way. I think I'd rather have him in my lineup than Gronkowski in any given week.
Yeah, and so my bad calls this year, and just unfortunately, the way a lot of drafts went is it was very possible to get all three of these trash bags. Rob Gronkowski, Jordan Howard, and Demaryius Thomas. Just, I mean, you start a draft that way, and just rest in peace. It's not happening for you. And unfortunately, I had more than a few that went with those guys. So that was not the most pleasant experience in terms of drafting this year.
I swear I had not owned Gronkowski in any league, and I play in a lot of leagues. I had not owned him pretty much since he came into the league. Even in the early years, I was like always the guy who owned Aaron Hernandez and not Gronkowski. And this year, of course, I got Gronkowski in two leagues, and you know, somehow I've overcome it in one, but in the other, I think I'm like 3-9 or something like that. So this was not the year to have Gronk. I know one for me, for some reason, I thought Matthew Stafford was going to have an excellent year. I figured they're giving him a little bit of a running game. With those receivers he had, I figured how could he possibly miss? Thought he could just, you know, fall ass backward into a top 10 quarterback season, and that did not happen at all. So I was kind of stuck dragging him around on a lot of teams and having to scramble a little bit at quarterback. What kind of a season has it been for you in DFS?
Oh, it's been good. It's been a good year. This has been one, I think, my most profitable year since 2015. Though I haven't yet to have one really good tournament week. It's mostly been just grinding through cash games. But I think it would have been a lot better year had a really good tournament score came. But it's been a very profitable year in DFS.
Has it been that you're putting like more hours into it, or have you just sort of refined your process and made like philosophical adjustments that have carried you?
To be honest with you, the last couple weeks, man, I have just been running good. Like, a lot of it has just been like being in the right spot at the right time. Like this last weekend, I got the 50-point Christian McCaffrey game. And he was only, I think, like 40% owned, and some kind of thinner plays have worked out. Like, guys, like cheap wide receivers have kind of just went my way this year, as opposed to getting, you know, like the horrible, four catches for 45 yards game. It's been for like six catches for 85 yards. So like, that's kind of mostly what it's been. And I think maybe I'm just picking up a lot more, cause I really kind of rededicated myself to football this off season. And I think some of that stuff is just kind of subconsciously going through. And then also, learning from Josh Hermsmeyer and just paying less overall attention to defensive matchups, I think has been helpful as well.
Have you had certain go-to guys who have carried you and been like staples of your lineups?
Whoever starts at quarterback for Tampa Bay, whoever the cheapest viable tight end is. I just have not paid up for tight. I paid up for tight end once all year, and it was Kittle last week. And James Conner definitely, Christian McCaffrey definitely. Both of them have been really good, and Corey Davis. A lot of Corey Davis as well. Even though he hasn't really been that great.
It's nice that James Conner has been paying the bills for you this year. I mean, I totally missed out on him. Like, he is just, yeah, if for the people who saw him coming and you know, he was so readily available even when we knew that Lev was going to miss, you know, at least one game, but kudos to you for jumping on that train. So anyone who, even in a good year, who has hurt you repeatedly in DFS?
Anyone who's hurt me repeatedly in DFS? Well, it would be any tournament lineup with Rob Gronkowski, clearly, because he's just been horrible. Guys that have hurt me. I'm trying to think of anyone I just like really hate. Well, I never get Antonio Brown right. So anytime he's ever been chalky, it's been kind of miserable for me. DeAndre Hopkins, actually, it kind of in these showdown slates, he's been in a couple of them, and I've just been on the wrong side of him every time.
Yeah, that's frustrating when you can't get the superstar receivers right. I've had that happen a couple of times. Davis, I know you're a big Chiefs fan. You live in Kansas City. You grew up in Chiefs country, did you not?
I did grow up in Chiefs country. Technically, I am a big Cowboys fan, but they've just lost me. Like, and also being more involved in DFS makes me care less about the outcomes in terms of like my emotions for a team. But I am a big Patrick Mahomes fan, absolutely huge Mahomes fan.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So this is obviously a great season to be a Chiefs fan. And, you know, what the best thing about it for you has been mostly the greatness of Mahomes.
Yeah. And, you know, just like going to the games has been a really good experience. Like watching the games at bars around here has been a really good experience. That's like one of the few really cool things left about sports, and like really in society. But it is a big equalizer. Like people from anywhere, any background can kind of all enjoy sports together, especially when the team is so good.
Oh, and the Arrowhead tailgating scene is incredible. I mean, it is
incredible, but getting into Arrowhead is, I mean, it is just a miserable experience. Like it's bad. The traffic is.
Oh yeah. Cause there's nothing around there, and it's just like two lane highways coming into that complex.
Two lane highways and a traffic light on one of the entrances. So it like, honestly, it can take you an hour to get in there.
Oh, that's terrible. So you going to bars, are you like near the plaza?
I'm near the plaza, but I'm closer to Westport. I'm like walking distance to Westport, probably about a mile away from the plaza is where my place is at.
Oh, another great eating and drinking zone. So yeah, no doubt a lot of excellent Chiefs bars, I'm sure.
Some very good Chiefs bars. And my friends from college who also moved to Kansas City, they are all bartenders at like the biggest bar kind of in the Westport area.
Oh, that's pretty convenient.
Yeah. That's pretty nice. Never have to wait to get in.
What's great for Chiefs fans is that it's pretty clear they're going to be credible Super Bowl contenders every year as long as they have Mahomes at quarterback. I mean, their defense this year is average at best, and to call it average might even be a little generous. And yet they're 9-2 with losses only to the Rams and Patriots in close games.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of just think either the defense will eventually become good enough, or they'll just keep drafting and signing good offensive players, and you know, eventually, I think Mahomes will win a minimum of one Super Bowl. If I was a betting man, I would take the over on one Super Bowl for Mahomes. I actually have a lifetime bet out with CSU Ram under 0.5 Super Bowls for Andrew Luck and his career, but I would take the over on that for Mahomes.
Oh, definitely. I would take that too. That's interesting on Luck. I think you might be looking good for that, because Luck does not strike me as a guy who's going to play till he's 40.
No. And his shoulder is just like eventually going to fall apart.
I really, really do hope, though, that when the final chapter of the Chiefs 2018 story is written, that it doesn't include anything having to do with Andy Reid clock mismanagement. I just don't want some Andy Reid patented clock fuck up to diminish what he's done with this offense and, you know, what a great job he's done of mentoring Mahomes.
I mean, you know it's coming. You know, at some point there will be a clock mismanagement thing. Like, you just need to accept it at this point, because he needs to hire someone like McVay, as McVay has a dude on the sideline whose job it is to keep track of the clock for him.
I mean, maybe it'll be Mahomes himself. Maybe it'll be him. Like, the kid just has such a presence that maybe he by himself can like somehow pull Reed out of that black hole he gets into, like in the last 2 minutes of a half or at the end of a game.
I think it's not impossible that he would be able to figure out the situation better than the coaches would.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. At least not with Clock, or at least with Clock. I mean, yeah, that's Reed has failed on that front repeatedly. So,
I mean, I kind of think that he just has this preternatural ability. Like, I think he's like I would say already. I think he is as good as Rodgers' peak and has the ability to be better because he is less afraid of throwing interceptions.
Yeah, maybe that is part of what Rodgers sometimes, like, he's gone through bad stretches at times, Rodgers, and like, it's hard to tell because, you know, Rodgers' bad stretches are better than like peak Andy Dalton or, you know, other league average quarterbacks. But it's true, you know, he does sometimes like get a little almost too obsessed with turnover avoidance. And, you know, Mahomes,
well, we got a great stat right now. Aaron Rodgers has 47 throwaways this year, and last year, no quarterback, I think, even topped 30 in all of last season.
Yeah, Mahomes is definitely, and I was telling a friend this the other day, he is more Favre than Rodgers, for sure. And, you know, that can be good or bad, but he does remind me a lot of young Favre with the arm talents and just making, like, a couple electrifying throws every week and you know, just sort of has that like incredible presence. I mean, I still think people sort of
totally
the twilight years for Favre were just so shaky that I think sometimes people forget just how good the peak years and the even the early pre-peak years were. And
Favre was an electric player, man. People, I think if Favre played in the NFL today, he would just be like a meme. Like, people would just be like gifting his crazy throws. Like, you're totally right that people have let like the last 4 years of him playing cloud the player that he was. He was an amazing quarterback, and he was a spectacle to watch. He was more like it was an experience watching Brett Favre play football. Like, he was really good, and it does kind of suck that his actual playing career is like not really how people refer to him anymore.
Right. I mean, there should be like some sort of bell curve with how you weigh careers, I think. And like, you know, that the end years should get diminished in importance a little bit, because I mean, I just think most people on their all-time quarterbacks list would put Elway ahead of Favre. And I think that's absolutely insanity. Like, peak.
No, Elway was like Joe Flacco.
Like, he might have been better. And I know Elway had to carry some pretty shaky teams early in his career. But like, peak Favre was so much better than peak Elway. It's not even funny.
Do you think that we should go back and unweight how good quarterbacks were because their teams ran so much? I kind of think that it was easier to play quarterback back when teams ran all the time. Or maybe not. Maybe because you were like always in third and eight. Maybe it was harder to play quarterback when teams ran all the time.
Like, I think that's why Marino sort of gets undersold. Like, Marino did not have any greats running backs that he was coupled with for the most part.
I mean, his season, when you look at everyone else that like and their passing stats, like those Marino years, he was doing stuff that no one else was doing, like even more so than like what Breeze and Mahomes are doing this year compared to the rest of the league.
Oh yeah, I mean, the passing volume was so elevated for the era on those Dolphins teams, and you know, like, for the most part, the defenses were mediocre. There wasn't much of a running game. It was truly Marino carrying those Dolphins teams.
Yeah, he was a legend player.
Davis, let's turn to golf real quickly. I know you're a golfer. It's getting cold in the Midwest, and maybe you've put your clubs away for the season. If so,
they are away.
Well, were you in the clubs on good terms when you said goodbye to each other?
So I had an arm surgery this last year in February. So basically all of the last year, I guess like the last 6 months of me golfing was pretty much like rehab stuff. Like I think I played 18, probably 10 times, but I was nowhere near my best before I had the surgery on my arm. My best round was an 89, and I did not touch that. The best round I had post surgery was a 94, which is not good. And so we were on good terms in the sense that I still love golf, but I was playing very poorly at the time that the frost came.
Are you a destination golf guy who aspires to play a bunch of good courses? Like, what's the best course you've ever
Yeah, I would love to play good courses someday, but you know, before that point, I would like to be good enough to play them.
Trust me, man, that's not a prerequisite. I have not played a lot of really good ones in the States, but I made a couple of Scotland trips, and
yeah, that's what I want to do is do the Scotland thing.
It turns out they still let you on the old course even if you're not that good. So, as I can attest.
I just don't know. I don't know how, like, honestly, I don't know how much I would enjoy being bad at something. I'm like a very, very competitive person. And so like playing poorly, I'm not someone on the course who's like actively angry and like throwing clubs around and swearing and stuff, but I do not enjoy it near as well when I'm not playing well.
Yeah, man. I used to have that problem, but then I kind of came to terms with the fact that, like, you know, my golf career peaked in high school and it's been sort of a decline ever since. I did hear you say in your podcast that you attended the final round of the PGA Championship this year. What was that experience like?
Oh man, let me tell you, a full day out in the sun at a golf tournament will wear you down. It was a very cool experience. My girlfriend got me the tickets for my birthday and we went. And we got there at about 7:30 in the morning and watched Rory play, and then was there to see Brooks and Adam Scott tee off when they were the leaders group. And I mean, golf in person, you really gain a respect for just how far these dudes can hit it. Like these shots that they are hitting, their second shots into the green on these par fours, a lot of the times they are putting it from 180 to like 15 feet, which, like, oh, 15 feet, he probably makes a par. That is an insanely hard shot to make, and these guys just do it. It is a phenomenal experience to watch. I would recommend it to anyone who even has a passing interest in golf.
Yeah, it is really cool to watch them play up close. I had a buddy and I who we used to go to the Greater Milwaukee Open before that tour stop became defunct, and this was one a lot of the top players skipped, although we did actually see Tiger Woods hit his first professional shot at the Greater Milwaukee Open. Not first shot in a tour event, but his first one as an official pro. And yeah, just like being up close and watching what these guys can do with a ball and how they can work a shot around trouble. And it is pretty amazing. Davis, one other off-topic subject I have to hit on with you before we turn back to football. People in Kansas City obviously have strong feelings about their barbecue, and I assume you're no exception. So which of the barbecue places in Kansas City is your favorite?
Arthur Bryant's on 18th in Brooklyn. Everything else is second place. I will hear no substitute.
I was so worried you were going to say something else, man. That's my favorite too. I thought you were going to say Joe's or Gates or...
No, Gates is not even good.
You're not a Gates guy at all?
I think it's like just okay. I would eat it if I was like downtown or whatever and was close to one, but not huge on it. And Joe's all right. I actually used to live right next door to Joe's, like 2 minutes away. And but I think Arthur Bryant's is like, it's so clearly the best one.
Oh yeah, man. And it's just like, it's got the feel that a barbecue place should have. Like, you know how authentic it is. You can see the guys smoking the meat right there. What is your go-to order at Bryant's?
The burnt ribs, always. Or the burnt ends, always.
Burnt ends, yes. Oh, man. Dude, we have got to go out for barbecue in Kansas City because you are a guy after my own heart, for sure.
When you're here, man, let me know. We'll go golf, too.
That's right. We'll golf and have Bryant's. That'll be the perfect day, man. All right, so back to football. I want to close the show by covering a lot of ground in a hurry. So let's go sort of rapid fire on a bunch of topics. I'll throw some things at you and you can just give me short answers, unless, of course, you feel like going a little longer on any of these. Where have you been in the great Amari Cooper debates, and where are you now?
I was definitely on the average Amari side of this conundrum, but I mean, Dallas clearly wants him to be really good, and they're going to give him a lot of targets and ensure that he is really good. And I think that he kind of seems to fit with the types of throws and routes that Dak likes. And also he fits with Linehan's like boring, like the timing routes. He like knows how to do that pretty well.
Yeah, good point on that. And if I do have any hope in advancing in the Scott Fish Bowl, it might be riding on Amari Cooper. Now, you have always been a big vocal Cam Newton guy. Do you feel sort of vindicated by how his career's gone over the last couple of years after people were trashing him?
Of course I do. He's like the fifth or sixth best quarterback in football. Any team would just be, they would just be so lucky to have him. And like, he's just so good. And another thing that people say is that, you know, if he couldn't run, he wouldn't be that good. And he's like just this amazingly good passer still. Cam is so good. And they like could win a Super Bowl. Not this year, I don't think. But I think the core of this team, especially with McCaffrey and DJ Moore, like they could win a Super Bowl for sure.
And what's crazy is that he is completing almost 70% of his passes this year. Like he's 10 percentage points higher than his career average right now.
Yeah, I think that finally the coaching staff has figured out like what he can and can't do, and that's a huge thing.
And also like getting him some pass catchers with speed, like, you know, not only McCaffrey but Samuel and DJ Moore, when before it was like, oh, Cam's a little off target with some of his throws, let's get him 6'5" guys who can catch the ball outside the frame of their body. And unfortunately 6'5" guys who can't run, Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funchess, and it just,
yeah, what's up with that? What's up with them just getting him like old guys who can't move?
Oh, that was just it was Gettleman. That was like the Gettleman miscalculation there, thinking that like, you know, having tall guys and no speed whatsoever on the team was going to be good for Cam Newton. Go figure. How do you think Austin Ekeler is going to do while Melvin Gordon's out?
Oh, I think he's going to do great. The big secret is that running backs who catch a lot of passes and do so efficiently are going to continue to do that regardless of whether or not they're starting. I also just don't think that Melvin is that good. I think he's like he's above average, but he's not great.
All right, we gotta agree to disagree on that. Part of it is I'm a Wisconsin guy, but I do actually think Melvin is pretty good, and that, you know, it was largely Mike McCoy holding him back and some pretty crappy offensive lines.
Well, certainly that could be true. I don't think Melvin's bad. Like I don't think that Melvin Gordon is a bad player. I also just think that like the number of difference making running backs in the NFL is like Saquon, DJ, McCaffrey, and maybe not even McCaffrey running the ball. I think McCaffrey only receiving the ball. I don't even think that he's a good runner.
So I know, just to stick with Ekeler for a second, I know a lot of people listening to this are probably counting on him and have, you know, picked him up recently and are hoping that he can be kind of a playoff savior for them. I mean, do you think Justin Jackson maybe carves into his share of the workload a little bit, that maybe they go a little more 50-50?
Well, there was like the Adam Schefter smokescreen that the team was like excited to use him or whatever that week. But no, I don't think so at all. I think if anything, I think Ekeler shifts into what Melvin was getting, and then Justin Jackson gets the carries that Ekeler was getting, but not so much the targets.
What about Philip Lindsay? Does this guy have staying power?
Oh, he's good. He's really good. Like he had something crazy like in his college career, like 90% of his team's total rushing yards, like non-QB rushing yards, which is like, that's a very high market share percentage of a team's rushing yards for a college team. And he just was like, I really like guys who just prove that they could get 300 carries in college and like, oh yeah, then you can do this in the NFL. And so far, Lindsay definitely looks the part.
Yeah, man, it's crazy that he was so overlooked by NFL teams.
I mean, and that stuff happens with running backs, though, especially smaller running backs. Like, those guys just fall.
So we kind of touched on tight end earlier, but I have to know how, when Scott Fishbowl, you mentioned you have Kelce and Njoku, so you're kind of more heavily invested there. But in more conventional fantasy leagues where it's not tight end premium and you know, can't necessarily roster a bunch of them, how did you handle the tight end position?
Drafted a lot of that loser Rob Gronkowski, who just plays right tackle for the Patriots now. My tight end plan was ruined by a couple things this year. One, Gronk turning into an offensive lineman, and two, Jack Doyle being injured. I have Jack Doyle more than any other player in best ball drafts, or more than any other tight end, and he's been good when he's been out there, but he just hasn't been healthy, so that's been pretty brutal. And then actually, honestly, a lot of Eric Ebron. I was really high on this Colts offense, so I drafted a lot of both of them. So, you know, about two thirds, not great.
Was probably not the right answer to be scared off by, you know, the possibility that Doyle and Ebron would cancel each other out. Because, I mean, it just seems like Luck loves throwing to tight ends. And whether it's those two or Eric Swope or Mo Alie-Cox, like, he's going to find the tight ends a lot. And why not when your other receivers after T.Y. are like Ryan Grant and Chester Rogers?
I mean, who could say? I think that Luck is he's like such a Rorschach as a player, don't you think? Like he sometimes he plays so bad and just looks like he couldn't win a football game to save his life. And then other times he's just like leading game winning drives with, you know, Eric Swope.
I know. And I'm worried about that because if he is a Rorschach, like I don't know where I stand on him. And I kind of never have. Like I've never had a positive. I've never been in like the Lux great or the Lux bad camp. I've always been sort of just straddling the fence.
Luck is a decidedly slightly above average quarterback who doesn't have the ability to be great. No, he has the ability to be great, but it's not there yet.
Do either Josh Adams or Gus Bradley feel real to you?
Gus Bradley does. Josh Adams, just he's not going to get enough work in the passing game to be like a good fantasy starter. If he scores, he will be good for you. And if he doesn't score, he's going to get 8 DK points.
Yeah. I'm just like I'm perplexed by the Gus Bradley lack of college pedigree. And I know you don't necessarily have to have great numbers, but like Philip Lindsay was a guy who did have really productive numbers in college. And Gus Bradley is just kind of a guy who was, you know, a backup, but I don't know. Maybe he's just, some guys get overlooked in their college career. So maybe this is real.
Yeah, I mean, that does happen, though it is very rare for guys who, like, didn't play in college to be good NFL starters.
Are there any guys from this rookie receiver class who you're especially bullish on?
DJ Moore. I mean, DJ Moore is going to be a pure stud. He's going to be a wide receiver one in fantasy before too long.
Do you like Cortland Sutton?
Yes, I definitely do like Cortland Sutton as a player, but I kind of just... I do think Case Keenum is good enough to win in the NFL, but clearly he is not buoying things up there. He's not making other guys in that offense better, and neither is the coaching staff.
Yeah, you're right. Moore has Cam, and Sutton might need an upgrade to a different quarterback before he can truly shine. Last one, Davis. You were a big, noteworthy Jeff Janis backer a few years ago. You and Fantasy Mansion keeping the torch lit there. But that torch is pretty much out now. Has anyone taken Janis's place for you? Someone who's mostly off the fantasy radar, but has you in their truther camp?
You know, because I didn't do as much work with the NFL draft this last year, I don't really have, a great answer for who I'm really big on. The answer could be Corey Davis right now. And he's just not popular with people in fantasy, but I just think he's like fantastic. And Mariota is the one keeping him down.
That could be, man. I mean, it does seem like he's going to be a devalued asset next year just because every time, and I tweeted something about this like a couple of weeks ago and instantly got like 500 likes from people. Corey Davis is pissed off, but, you know, every time it seems like he has that good game and like, oh, Corey Davis has finally arrived. And then the next week it's like 3 catches for 19.
Which I think is really a function of Mariota's health and the play calling. Because I don't think he as a player is inconsistent. I just think that team they kind of just run too much.
Davis, I really want to thank you for joining me this week. I think any of your guests on the TakeCast would agree that you are a really fun guy to talk to and someone who can keep up his end of the conversation on just about any topic. Before you go, just let me remind listeners that you can be heard every week. And sometimes more than once a week, in fact, on the TakeCast, and that's T-A-E-K cast, all one word. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbeam. Tell me which platforms I'm missing.
It's on all of them. I host wherever podcasts are found, and I can't promise more than one episode a week. I have to be feeling pretty ambitious to get to that level.
Oh, I should also ask you to tell people there is a Patreon add-on that's available to people who fall in love with the show. Is that right?
Yes. So if you go to patreon.com/takecast, there is the ability to there is the ability to subscribe to extra versions of the show. We have bonus episodes and we have ad-free versions of the show, as well as DraftKings slate specific showdown breakdowns. So like Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, we have special shows for those games, breaking them down like projections and tournament options.
And on top of that, you can also catch Davis on the Swolecast, S-W-O-L-E cast, a DFS pod that he usually does with, and tell me if I have this right, Davis, Evan Silva, Dave Kitchen, and Dan Gaspar?
Yep, that is correct.
Excellent. So find him on Twitter if you haven't already, at DavisMatic. Davis, thanks again for being here, man.
Hey, thanks, man. It was great.
My friends, that is going to do it for this week's show. I want to, again, thank this week's guest, Davis Matic. I once again implore you to listen to his excellent podcast, which is called The Take Cast, and be sure to find Davis on Twitter, at Davis Matic. And as always, I am deeply indebted to my producer, Colm Kelly, the finest producer of fantasy football podcasts in all of Ireland. Colm is also a fellow beleaguered fan of the Green Bay Packers, so we have been crying on each other's shoulders lately. Well, figuratively, that is. It would be hard for me to cry on Colm's shoulders because, one, he's thousands of miles away in Ireland, and two, I think Colm is like 6'4 or 6'5, so his is not a shoulder I could easily cry on without standing on a step stool. But I also want to note that Colm is an executive producer for RotoViz Radio, the podcasting arm of the great fantasy football think tank RotoViz, and Colm also co-hosts an outstanding weekly podcast called RotoViz Overtime, along with the esteemed Sean Siegel. I urge you to check out that podcast and also to follow Colm on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. And I also want to thank my colleague Melissa Jacobs, owner and proprietor of thefootballgirl.com, home to my rankings. Follow Melissa on Twitter at The Football Girl, and be sure to check out her two podcasts. Melissa hosts The Football Girl podcast, where she is a guest every week, and she also co-hosts the outstanding Football Date Night podcast, along with her husband Dave. That one records every Sunday night, and it's a really entertaining and fun podcast to listen to on a Monday, so be sure to check it out. And last but not least, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate your support. And I'm very grateful to those of you who've taken the time to rate and review this podcast on iTunes. It really helps out me. It really helps out the pod. So you guys are the best. I wish all of you well in week 13. I know some of you have games of enormous magnitude coming up. I wish you the best of luck. I will be back again next week with another great guest. Until then, please be good to each other. I've got a hand.